Hi, this is Mary Wilson of the Supreme, and you're listening to my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show, and we just have so much fun, my baby love, me and Mike Miller. Woo!
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my extreme pleasure to have as my guests the original Vandellas, Annette Beard Sterling Hilton, and Roz Ashford Holmes. How are you, ladies?
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike. Fine, thank you.
So let's go back to Detroit. You're very, very young. When did the musical start for both of you?
Started in high school.
Right?
Mm-hmm. In the mixed choir and glee club.
Right. And did you go to the same school as Annette?
No, we went to separate schools on the opposite sides of town.
Different schools together.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I understand. When did music start for you?
Music started for me, I was pretty much in high school, but I sang with my church choir.
Right.
And really, I started singing with my church choir so that I could meet my girlfriend's brother, because I didn't have any brothers. And
right.
He was older, and he was kind of cute.
Right. But, and actually, you were both actually probably in the same grade, because I know you're the same age. We won't divulge that, but who's older anyway, do you know?
Annette is older.
Oh, okay. We won't talk much about that.
I don't have a problem with that. None at all.
Really, really. Okay, well, I'm 64, you know. It's like, you know, some days I feel like 164 and some days I feel like 34.
So. Oh, tell me about it. I'll be 68 on July 4th. I'm not ashamed of my age.
All right. So, you know, so basically you came out of a group of people that in Detroit, the people that made it really, really to the top of the music biz were all in around that same nucleus and the same age. I mean, there was a wealth of great, great singers in Detroit that came just from that time frame.
Pretty much, yes.
You know, and it was a great thing. So you came together at about 57, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Right?
So by the way, this is Rosalyn. She's only about 4 months older than I was born in September 2nd, 1943. So she's only about, July, August, September.
2 months.
Maybe 2 months older than me, but that makes her older, correct?
Exactly right. But you see, this reminds me of what happens when the group got together for rehearsals all the time, is that, you know, I always used to tell my Harmony Street group, and I had three ladies in that group, and Dee used to get on the bandstand, and she used to say, you know, we have three times of the month in this group, and we take it out on him. But, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I always told them, when you're on the stage, just act the way you do at rehearsal, you know. It's just like, do it for each other and talk to each other, and you'll draw the crowd in because they'll want to know what's going on up there.
Oh,
know?
We do.
Yeah.
We do. We go through this whole bit on stage, and the people are all in, like you say.
Right, and I can see that that's happening now. That's why I say it.
Oh, yeah, they get a big kick out of it. Because Rosalind will start it. Excuse me.
So tell me about Pops Larkin. He was very influential in your musical career.
Well, Edward Larkin, this is Rosalind. Edward was sort of like a manager.
Right.
I would think that he had managed a couple of groups. He had a group with five guys in it. And then he had another group with two young men and one young lady, which was my sister.
Right.
And so my mother had found his name in the newspaper somewhere, you know, saying that he had managed groups.
Right.
She wanted him to listen to my sister's group. So in the process, while listening to my sister's group, he had mentioned the fact that he was, you know, had the intentions of starting a girl group, because he didn't have an all-girl group.
I see.
So I am assuming that between my mother and my sister, they mentioned the fact that she mentioned the fact that she had a sister. So next thing I know, my mother was telling me that I had to go down here and audition for this group. And I kind of like said, well, no, not me. That's not what I want to do. I don't want to sing. I want to be an airline stewardess.
What?
So it ended up that she made me go.
So in other words, you became a Vandella, you know, eventually and went to the top of the music industry, kicking and screaming, being dragged by your mother so that your sister could go sing.
Mm-hmm. My mother, yep.
That's interesting. I like that.
It is, yep.
That reminds me of American Idol, you know, when two people come, you know, and somebody comes to support their brother or sister, and they wind up auditioning and they get the audition.
Right,
amazing.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, both of you, you form a group, and you're with Gloria Williams, and it's the Delphi's.
Correct.
Right. And Annette, you were a contralto, because Robin in my group was a contralto, and Roz, you were the soprano. So you hit all the high notes.
Yep, I tried.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. I was there. I was a fly on the wall.
Okay.
I knew that, you know.
Yeah, that was my training from school, in the soprano section.
Well, so Roz, you were very shy when you were a kid. That's what I read.
Yeah. I still am.
You still are. So, in other words, you're not. Do you say a lot on stage, or do you pretty much let everybody else talk and you just sing well?
Well, that's where I do most of my clowning is when I'm on stage. I think my shyness is more so when I'm off stage.
Well, you know, I know, and I've said this to everybody because I've been doing it since I'm 15, and you know, everybody I talk to says to me the same thing. You're that person that you are when you're on your way to the show, and then just before you get out on stage, you turn the switch and you become that other person.
Right.
You
yes,
know.
That's me.
And people that haven't done it really don't understand what that's all about. But you know, it's you know, that's the way you do that because you can't be on all day.
Right.
I mean, it's just amazing. Annette, you ran track when you were a kid in school, right?
In junior high.
In junior high. Wow. Were you good at it?
I thought so.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, you know, it's good to have that background. Okay.
I was a little active in junior high, but by the time I got to high school, we had pretty much begun to sing, so everything else sort of ceased.
Isn't that amazing how once you get locked into that singing situation, it's, you know, you don't have time for anything. You don't have time for the social life. You don't have time, you know, it's rehearsal. And once you get bitten by it, you develop that whole spiritual relation for it, and it gets into your blood, you know. And people that haven't done it don't understand the draw, you know. Why do you need to do this? And you know, it's even people that love you, they're on the outside. They're not on the inside. They don't understand, you know, how you can become so consumed by something like that. You know,
right?
It's just an amazing thing.
Like Roz was saying, she had wanted to be an airline stewardess, and I wanted to be a nurse. And my getting to becoming a singer,
right?
Not my idea. I mean, I sing with the church choir, but like I said, that was only to get next to my girlfriend's brother. But once we started the singing,
right,
like you said, and we were doing rehearsals and things like that, then it did become our way of life. I mean, even at the age, we were like 14 years old.
Right.
We were just pretty much going into high school,
right,
you know, and it became our way of life. It was what we did pretty much every day when we got out of school. Once that group was formed, all we wanted to do was get with that group and harmonize.
Right.
And our lead singer at that time, Gloria, she was teaching Roz and I so many things.
Right.
You know, about singing, that it was just so interesting for us, and we just wanted more. We just wanted more, you know?
Yeah. And also, you know, when people are appreciating what you're doing. I mean, when you're getting the feedback, say, hey, you guys are good. I mean, you know, and that inspires you to do even better and get tighter. And then, of course, you're singing with the Delphi's. And then when did Martha Reeves come into the group?
She came in much later because, actually, when we started out as the Delphi's, there were five girls.
Right.
And we eventually lost... They went like one by one.
Right.
So we ended up losing two girls. And at that time, we replaced the girl, one of the girls, with a guy. And
right.
Sang for a little while, and then we lost him. And so then it got to be just the three of us. So our lead singer, which is Gloria Johnson.
Right.
At the time, she knew Martha.
Uh-huh.
So she approached Martha and asked her would she like to sing with our group.
Right. Now, this was with the Delphi's at that time?
Yeah,
right.
That was with the
Delphi's. Right. And had you recorded yet?
No, that was in the early,
okay, so this is pre going into the studio.
Yeah. Well, we did do a recording, a couple of recordings. No, not a couple, just one. We did, once we got Martha in the group, we started doing a lot of background work. We had left Edward Larkins, and we hooked up with another manager, and his name was Fred Brown. Fred Brown.
Right.
And he had a few connections. So he had managed, he was managing a young man by the name of J.J. Barnes.
Right.
And he recorded J.J. Barnes, so he used us, the Delphi's, the four of us, as the background singers behind J.J. Barnes.
Uh-huh.
And so once we did this recording, we did an answer. He did a recording called Won't You Let Me Know?
Right.
And we did an answer. And come think, I can't even remember who wrote that song.
Not me either.
But we did an answer to his Won't You Let Me Know call, I'll Let You Know.
Uh-huh.
Which was led by Gloria Williams.
Right, and that was about 1960, I think.
Yeah, it had to be the early 60s.
Yeah, and that was on Checker, the Checker label?
Checker label, right.
Right, and then came the Checkmate label.
Checkmate, that's what we
There He Is at My Door. I know that record.
No, Checkmate was a melody label, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was from Motown. That one we didn't do until we went to Motown.
I see.
There he is at my door.
I see.
We did the J.J. Burns. That was on Checkmate Later.
Right. What about It Takes Two? That was a Delphi tune.
Now, that was a Checkmate.
Gotcha.
It takes two people to argue about what's right or wrong. And two hearts must be present. To sing love's old sweet song. Two is a magic number. That makes the world go around and around and around. And one
I see. The Delphis became the Vells at one point. Is that correct?
We've been some of everybody.
Now, who came up with all these names?
Now, we don't know where the Vells came from. But I assume that was another one of Barry's ideas.
Uh-huh.
We were the Delphis, and we recorded that somebody had wrote. That's when we did, I think, the You Never Cherish. I think that was by the Vells.
Gotcha.
And the next thing we know, they were making a recording, and the name on the recording was the Bells.
Okay. I see. That happens a lot, too, because it's call me what you want, just invite me. You know what I'm saying?
We became the Bells, and then we became the Bell Jeans.
Uh-huh.
Because we did a background with LaBrenda Benn called Camel Walk.
Right.
And they used the we were in the background, but they used the name the Bell Jeans. LaBrenda Bill and the Bell Jeans.
Wow.
Now all you gotta do.
had quite a few names.
Yeah, we have.
Now, but you know, here you are, you haven't had a hit yet, but you're doing backgrounds for, like, huge records like Stubborn Kind of Fella. What were some of the other big records that both of you ladies did backup on?
We did Marvin Gaye.
Some of the Marvin Gaye stuff, right?
Yeah, some kind of fellow friend doing Hitchhike.
Three big records.
Yeah.
Those are his three biggest, yes.
Yeah, you bet. That voice on top is way up there. So I guess I know who that was.
Oh, on the Pride and Joy?
Yeah. Pride and Joy. It was up there. So you know, I mean, this is, you know, and a lot of times people don't know on big productions who the background singers are. When you learn, finally, you know, you're amazed that some of the people who you know and love were the background singers on some big records. You just don't make the connection.
Right, because we just found out, I mean, just realized, well, we knew someone had sent me a tape of some things that we did even before we were with Motown.
Right.
Material.
Who was it? We just found out that that's us singing some backgrounds on some of the Wilson Pickett songs.
Bye.
Treat me sweet as you and give me money too. It took a long time to discover. Oh, baby, don't you weep no more for me, my baby. Weep no more for me, my love. Weep no more for me, my baby. You know I'm coming home. When I left my home, I was headed in the wrong direction, running all over town, acting like a clown. When I needed your love and affection, oh baby, don't you weep no more for me, my baby. Weep no more for me, my love. Weep no more for me, my baby. You know I'm coming home. Weep no more. Come walking through that same door. And I can imagine in my mind that these are the words you'll be saying.
And also because I guess at that time when you go into the studio so many times, you really don't remember every day that you were there. No. And the records are released, and all of a sudden you say, yeah, that's us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really have to listen to it to tell, but...
Yeah, actually, David sent me an email, and he I think he actually sent me one of the Wilson Pickett tunes.
Yeah.
He probably did. He is a true Vandellas fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I recall, what's the guy's name, B.B. Lee...
We did a song with a disc jockey.
Right.
And it was called The Horn.
The Horn?
The Horn.
Uh-huh.
We thought it was a silly song. We cracked up when we heard it, but we did it.
Well, a lot of silly songs become...
Horn, and we were singing, beep, beep, beep.
I'll find it. If it was released, I'll find it.
Hey, Lee Allen?
Lee
Brian?
Allen, I think it was.
I think it was Lee Allen also. Uh-huh. Yeah. I think
his name was... did some things with an artist called Mike Hanks.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if he's still around, but that was in our early days.
I got this horn just the other day.
Set me free
from a man who came a long, long way.
Wow, he'd like to set me free.
He said this horn, you understand, has come from Pakistan. And when you're all alone, if you pick the fine tone, you just wait and see. This horn, it's gonna set you free. I took this horn
beep, beep, beep.
Pakistan
beep, beep, beep.
I took it home
beep, beep,
I mean
beep.
I almost ran and when I heard the fine tone when I was all alone all my wishes came true. I mean my dreams of you. It wasn't something for the eye to see. But this horn, it'd like to set me free. Feeling sad. I mean, you're feeling real bad. You don't know what to do. Your honey don't want you. Just turn on the radio with the lights down low. Close your eyes real tight. Think of your honey tonight. And when you hear the horn, you'll see. You'll know just what happened to me. This horn. It'd like to set me free.
Oh, beep, beep, beep.
Now if you're feeling sad,
beep, beep,
I mean you're feeling real bad.
Beep, beep, beep.
Don't know what to do.
Beep, beep,
your honey don't want you. Just turn on the radio with the lights down low. Close your eyes real tight. Think of your honey tonight. And when you hear the horn, you'll see. You'll know just what happened to me. This horn, it'd like to set me free.
Lee Allen was probably on just about every radio in every car on those warm summer nights on Woodward Avenue. Of course, in those days, it wasn't known as the Woodward Cruise. It was more like the Motor City Speedway.
It was the world's largest drag strip then.
It's Saturday night, Lee Allen with the Detroit Sound.
Why don't you tell everybody who David is? Because David is one of your biggest fans, and he listens to my show. He called me and he said, you have to have Roz and Annette on the show. So why don't you tell everybody who David is?
David Bell is one of our fan become friend. We have been friends with him since when, Roz? Maybe the 80s?
Right.
Over 25 years, way over 25 years.
Wow.
When we first went over to England, we met David Bell.
Yeah. So he started off being a fan, but he has truly become a friend since then, and he sends us all kind of stuff. Is this the Vandellas? Please tell me this is the Vandellas.
Well,
because I was listening. I can hear Roz on the top. I can hear you on the bottom, and that, you know, so.
Well, you know what big fans they are in England, in the U.K.
Yes, they love Motown in the U.K., yes. They truly do.
Because, as you know, I mean, you know, Mary Wilson's a good friend, and I know she spent a lot of time over in the UK, and Lala Brooks is a good friend, and I know she spent her time there. And even, you know, the listening audience for this show, we also run the show early in the morning, you know, 2, 3 in the morning, so that the audience in Europe can get to listen to the show. So, you know, we're very aware of the fact that people over there have found this music and love it.
David actually is the reason why we're talking to you today.
Absolutely. He got in touch with me and he said to me, you know, you just have to have Roz and Annette on the show because I insist. And I said, well, okay then.
Did he say it like that? Shame on you, Professor Bale.
No, actually, he sent me an email which was about 11 paragraphs long, telling me his entire life story, your entire life story,
oh,
every tune
goodness.
That he ever did, sent me about 14 tunes. He's still sending me tunes. He sent me 6 tunes tonight. So,
yes, because I talked to him on instant message today,
and
I told him that we were going to do our interview tonight.
Right.
And he was like, oh, you got to tell me if this is you on the back of these
right.
songs. So Roz and I had to listen to these Wilson Pickett tunes, and, you know, we told him yes, and he's writing on the instant message, yippee, I knew it was you guys.
So tell myself and everyone who's listening, you know, when did the Vandellas actually become born? How did that happen?
Well, the Vandellas, I think they were born behind Marvin Gaye.
They were.
Okay.
We were born.
Once we started recording.
And you were signed to Motown at that point.
Once we got to Motown.
You were very young at that time. How old were you at that time when you were doing backup for Marvin?
We were still in high school.
18, 19, I think I was.
Wow, so it must have been thrilling to walk into a situation like Motown and, you know, walk into that little studio there. I guess when you're that age, you don't realize how big it all is.
I didn't realize the magnitude of what was going on. You know, we were into the singing.
Right.
This was another place that we could sing, do what we like to do, what we had been doing for, 4 or 5 years prior.
Right.
And that's how, you know, that's pretty much how we saw it. We knew that big things were happening because we saw people floating through this studio that
right.
we had heard on the radio, you know,
right.
like Smokey Robinson and the Miracles and,
right.
you know, people like that. And it was like, wow, you know.
Yeah.
Not ever really thinking that we were going to go anywhere or
yeah.
really do anything.
And Motown wasn't this big corporate building or whatever. It was a small studio with one really made hot room, you know, and some recording engineers and
yeah.
and some great, great musicians. And you just went in there and you just, you know, it was just a place where everybody just hung out and they became very creative.
It's just this one little house. And like I said, our excitement was the fact that we got a chance to just be there. And sitting in the lobby on the bench, on these benches in the lobby, and all of a sudden in comes Smokey and in comes the Temptations.
Right.
And, you know, the Supremes.
Right.
And look, gosh, you know, it was like, catch me, you know, am I really here with all these people?
Right. No, I can understand that totally. So I'm trying to imagine in my mind that the Delphi's become the Vells and you're doing some backup. And I'm trying to figure out how the group actually formed, you know, with Martha and when they actually stepped forward as Martha Reeves and the Vandellas.
Okay. What happened was once Martha got with the group, we did a lot of little spot hops and things like that. And
right.
perform at different places. And before Martha became a member of our group, she sung with another group called The Fascination.
Okay.
And this is where Jean got her from. She, you know, left The Fascinations and came with our group.
Right.
Then not too long after that, I think Martha was saying that she was singing somewhere one night in a
I think it was a 20 grand. One about
20 grand.
Used to be nightclubs.
Right.
And Mickey Stevenson, the A&R director for Motown, was there. And he told her to come in. She could come in for an audition. She said, I said, she gave him a card. He gave her a card and told her she could come in for an audition. So she said she didn't know that she had to call and make an appointment for the audition. She just up there. She was so excited the next day that she just went down there to the studio and said, you know, people go, well, who are you here to see? I'm here to see Mickey Stevenson because I'm supposed to come here for an audition. And they explained to her that it doesn't work that way. So I assume she said she did get a chance to wait around for Mickey. And
right.
She was in his office.
How many days did she wait?
And that same day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I understand that they must have told her, just, you know, hold on and we'll see if we can get in touch with Mickey. And they sent her to his office or some kind of way she ended up in his office.
Right.
And the phone was ringing, and she just took it upon herself to answer the phone.
Ah.
And so she was from the story that she always tells us is that the musicians were calling because they were trying to get in touch with Mickey.
Right.
In order to get their check cut. You know, they weren't getting their check. They wasn't getting their money paid and
right.
everything, so they were calling Mickey to get on his case.
Right.
So she started taking messages and everything, and Mickey came into the office. She just, you know, showered him with all these messages. And so the next thing we know, she was taking messages for Mickey, and she was working for Mickey as his A&R secretary.
Well, that's one way to get in. You know, that reminds me of the young kids who go to the big recording studios, and they'll do anything. You know, they have hit songs in their back pocket, and they'll sweep the floors, and they'll paint the walls and whatever just to get inside the building so that they can eventually cozy up to somebody enough to say, here's my hit tune, or let me step up to the microphone. You know, it's been done that way. But, you know, the story goes that she was a secretary there, and so now I understand a little bit more about how it went down.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting.
Well, I guess you could tell the rest of the story how the news got.
Well, once she became the secretary,
right?
I think it was Mary Wells or somebody. She would set schedules for some of the artists to come in and
right.
do some recording and stuff like that. And I think it was Mary Wells that didn't show up or somebody didn't show up for a session.
Right.
And she told Barry or whoever it was, Mickey, that she sang with a group.
Uh-huh.
And could she bring her girls down, the group that she sang with,
right.
to do this background work or something like that? And they said, yeah, bring them in so
wow.
we could hear them, you know.
Right.
And that's really how we got started with doing a lot of background stuff. We did something for, I can't even remember the first person, but whoever it was, they evidently liked our sound.
Right.
And we kind of became the background singer.
Well, somebody liked it because, let me tell you.
And then I think it was that Marvin was had this session scheduled. And now they normally have a background group that's stationary. They're calling Andantes.
Right.
And the Andantes do background on basically everybody at Motown.
Right.
So I think they were out of town or something that particular time. So she called us in to do this session, and she called and said, would y'all like to come in and sing background behind Marvin Gaye?
Well, you know, I think I know what happened. I think Martha probably called them up from the office and told them, listen, Barry wants you to go down and pick up something, you know, down the block.
Yeah.
Could be. You never know. Now, I know that for years and years and years, there have been many, many stories told about how the name Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, or the Vandellas, got chosen. And I'd like you to shed some light on that so that I can know for sure, straight from the source.
Okay. Barry, after we had done so many tunes with Marvin, Barry liked our sound.
Right.
And he decided that he wanted to record us. He wanted to do a record on us. So he said we needed a name before he decided to record us.
Well, it always helps.
He was the world, we had a name. We had the Delphites.
Right.
But even behind Marvin, you know, he actually put our name on some of Marvin. I think on a couple of Marvin's records. It's Marvin Gaye and the Vandellas.
I don't think so.
I think it is on one. I think I saw it on one.
You know now that I'm going to get about 22 phone calls from record collectors that
they
are going to start telling me.
Won't they?
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
And at that time, there were still the four of us also. There was myself, Annette, Jean, and Martha in the group. So it was still a group of four.
Right. It was still all of us. But anyway, he said that he had to change the name.
Right.
Because he wanted to record us, and he didn't want to go through the all the legal stuff. As far as using the name Delphites, he was not for sure whether or not it was copywritten or whatever, so he was going to change the name.
Right.
So we were like, okay, you know, so he put us in a room and he told us, he said, I'll give you about 30 minutes or an hour to come up with a name. And so we said, okay. So he put us in a room and we're tossing pieces of paper around the table and writing names down and all this kind of stuff. And he pops in the room or pops his head in the room and he said, did you guys come up with a name yet? And we were like, no. You know, and he said, okay, you're going to be called the Vandellas.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, okay. And nobody fought him. Nobody said, well, we got this on a piece of paper or we got that. You know, we never even said anything like that. He just said, you don't have a name, you're going to be called the Vandellas.
Well, actually, he said, if you don't come up with a name within 30 minutes, whatever I call you, that's what you're going to be. So, in other words... Take it or leave it. Whatever name I give you, that's it, since you guys don't have enough.
Well, you know, because there's a story floating around that Martha lived on Van Dyke Street, and she liked Della Reese, and it was Van, and it was Della, and it was, you know, so...
340, in a nutshell, gave us that name.
Okay.
We did not fight him. We didn't ask him where he got it from. We didn't tell him we didn't like it or anything. We just was like, okay.
Hey, when the guy says, this is what we're going to call you, you know, because I've just made 22 hits for some other people, and I think I'm going to make one for you, but just, you know, when I call your name, come out and sing, you say, okay.
That's it. Yeah, that's your name.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, you know, he was very well respected at that time, and I guess that, you know, it was great just to be there, and to sing was even better, so, you know. That's what you did. So, okay.
At the time, though, it was the Vandellas.
Right.
Was the name.
I see.
Eventually, as things started, we started recording, Gloria left the group.
Right.
Because she could not afford to just, we were just like stuck like glue to the studio. We get out of school and hit the bus, and we'd be down at the studio half the day, you know, waiting to do some kind of recording or some footsteps and hand claps or stuff.
Right.
And basically the whole group would be there. But Gloria, she was employed. She had a job.
Right.
And she couldn't afford to, you know, spend a lot of time there, so she kind of broke it to us gently that she was going to have to leave the group, you know, because of her job.
Right.
It wasn't really a guarantee that how long we were going to be singing or what kind of money we were going to be making or anything.
If any.
Yeah. She couldn't jeopardize her job.
Right. Well, you know, I look, as many people as I know who were in the business at that time and were on some pretty big records, you know, they always tell me, I don't know who got the money, you know. I have no idea. It wasn't me, but I didn't get it. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, the money and some of the on-the-road stuff. But so here you are, and you step up to the microphone, finally, after getting a name. And what happened the first time you stepped up to the microphone and did a recording as the Vandellas?
What happened was when we did our first recording, there was actually a Motown review that was going out.
Right.
And Marvin was on the Motown Review. Vandellas did not have a recording out.
Okay.
And that The Vandals had done Stubborn Kind of Fellow, the background behind Marvin.
Gotcha.
And it sounds so good that when Marvin went out, they wanted to use the background also along with him.
On the road, yeah.
The background. So they put us on the Motown Review, and we didn't even have a record then.
I see.
And they let us open the show, and the main purpose of us being there was just back up Marvin.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember our opening ass song was A Handful of Memories. Was it A Handful of Memories? And I think we did I Found a Love or something like that. Didn't we in that?
We did something because we used to sing some of everything.
But that's, you know, what we used to open up the show with.
Well, I'm sure even though you went out and you were backing up Marvin in the show, there were nights that you found yourselves backing up other people just, you know, because, you know, that's what happens on a tour when you go out. It's like, oops, you know, tonight you're going to be backing up this group or that group. And you know, when you're singing that much, just, you know, 15 minutes, you know, in the dressing room is enough to get it down, you know.
Yeah. So, and then, too, in the process of being out on the road, Barry decided that he had a tune for us.
Uh-huh.
That he wanted to record.
And what was the name of that tune?
Come Get These Memories.
Love you part from me and left behind so many memories. Here's your old friendship ring. I can't wait no more. Here's your old love letters. I can't read them anymore. Love you.
I'll tell you something about that tune. Listening to that tune when I was younger and I had it in my record collection, I wore the grooves out of that tune. And that tune, I mean, was in every jukebox in the country, and that tune is still in every jukebox in the country as being one of the tunes that is a standard at this point. It was just a wonderful tune. And so you went in and recorded it. How did you feel about it?
But the thing about it, we had to come home off the tour and record it because he said, I need this done right away.
So you felt very strongly about it.
In the girl's home. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we came home and went into the studio and we recorded Don't Get Me Married.
Wow.
But we were on a tour. We were working. We had worked that day. I think we had done 4 shows that day. Where were we, Ross? Were we in Washington?
Yeah, but that was when we came back to do the album. We came home and recorded it. all night long. We stayed up all night recording the album.
Wow.
We left. We were in, in Washington, and he flew us out that night after the last show and directly to the studio, and we stayed in the studio almost
all night,
recording, you know, tunes for the album. Cause he wanted
so, in other words, you didn't just do an A and a B side. You were trying to complete a whole album.
Mm-hmm. We also did an album, yeah.
Wow.
And finished that album and got back on the plane and flew back to the Howard in order to be there for the next show that morning.
Right. And so then Memories was released. And I guess while you were on the tour, all of a sudden the tune caught on, and then as you came out, you probably sang it on the tour after that.
I don't think we did it on that first tour. Mm-hmm. It was probably the next tour that went out that we were able to do our own show, our own song.
Well, you know, I'm picturing this, and I'm saying to myself, okay, here you're out with, you know, Smokey and Marvin and all of these people, and all of a sudden Memories starts moving up in the charts, and all of a sudden you start moving up in the lineup. That's the way I envision it.
We eventually got there. It took us a while, but we did eventually move up in the lineup.
it's a great story. So, you know, Come and Get These Memories is a big hit. And then what happens next?
I think by that time, that's when the first Motown Review came out.
Okay.
When they came out with the first Motown Review, not the first one was a Motown Review, and that's the one that we backed Marvin up on. But by that time, I think a lot of the other artists had hits out, so he came out with a Motown Review.
Right.
They changed the name. It was the Motown Review.
And who was on the Motown Review? Now who was out there then? I guess it was the Supremes, Smokey,
Contours.
The Contours. Well, let me tell you, I've done some shows with Joe Billingsley. I love him.
Oh, he is so funny. We saw him yesterday.
Did you?
Oh yeah. We cannot tell you over the radio the nickname that he has for Rosalind and myself. Back up.
I'll email him later and I'll ask.
He'll tell you. He is so funny.
He might not. I don't know. But well, he's
funny on stage, too, because, I mean, I did a cruise with him not so long ago, and I was there with my wife, Paulette, and I did a couple of shows, and actually it was the Brooklyn Bridge, and it was the Teenagers, you know, Jimmy, and Joe on stage is so funny. He's just a funny guy. When he tells the story about the group, you know, and how things went down, he's just a funny guy.
He's comical. He is. He has us laughing all the time.
So here's that Motown Review.
I think Mary Wells was on it.
Mary Wells was on it, yeah.
Boy, that must have been some great show. Now, looking back, that must have been some great show. My goodness.
It was a good show. Our the first one we did with Marvin, that wasn't the one that we did all the one-nighters, was it, Roz? I don't think so.
Yeah, the first one was a lot of one-nighters. That was the big.
Yeah, so that was all over the country?
Yeah, the first one was mostly
through the South. But
yeah, well, let me ask you about that, because everybody that I've ever spent time with, and I'm talking about Herb Reed, and I'm talking about Jimmy Keys from the Chords, whose kids I taught. I was a dean, you know, in a junior high school in the Bronx for 30 years. I had Jimmy Keys' kids, and Jimmy would come into Career Day, and he would say, when we went through the South, everybody made love to our music, and we had to eat on the bus. Lala told me the story about Diana Ross trying to go into a deli and said, I'm Diana Ross. I'm going into that deli. And they threw her out. And Len Barry from the Dovells bought sandwiches for all the groups on the bus that couldn't go into the restaurant. And I'm saying to myself, it must have been really tough to come off the stage, you know, where people just, you know, adored you on stage, and then you had a different experience, you know, back in the hotel or back in the bus.
Right. Once you got on the bus, it was an experience for us, because that was something that we had never seen before or had never been around. Being in Detroit, you know, growing up, that never happened.
Right. You know.
And for us to be on that bus and be in the South, and when we got ready to go on stage, we would come out and look up, and they had, like, the black audience.
Right.
Probably maybe up in this balcony.
Right.
And on the floor would be, you know, a white audience.
Right, right.
And the thing about it was, everybody was having a good time.
Well, you know what? You know what I would have sung? I would have sung the first three tunes and looked up at the balcony. Sing the first three tunes to the balcony.
But we spread ourselves out. But it was just like
awkward.
No, I hear you. But you see, and it's really funny, but, you know, you're sitting in the audience. You don't know what the performers are feeling. I mean, I've been on both sides, and, you know, it's a lot of times the performers don't know what the audience is thinking, and the audience has no concept as to what the performers are thinking when they come out there. For instance, I said to little Anthony one night, I remember back at the Brooklyn Fox, I said, everybody in the audience smoked. I said, how did you sing? How did you do like three or four shows a day when everybody was blowing smoke at you? He says, are you kidding me, man? I used to put out my cigarette on the heel of my shoe just before I went out to sing. So we were blowing smoke back at them. So, you know, that's what it was. And I think some people had the concept that Berry Gordy and all of the Motown people were very strict with their performers. And I've heard otherwise. I've heard that it really wasn't that way at all. It was just one big creative party. How do you feel about that?
That's what I think. It was a big creative party because everybody looked out for each other and everybody loved each other. Now, as far as being strict... The only thing that with us ladies was we had to have a chaperone.
Yeah, okay, that I can understand.
Yeah, but other than that, he definitely made sure that when you went on stage, you performed to your best.
And that you looked your best.
You looked your best.
Oh, and you know, the Motown people, they were so well coached. Tell me about Maxine Powell.
Oh. That's where strictness comes from.
Right.
Matter of fact, speaking of Maxine, we just saw her yesterday.
No kidding. Well, you know, she's so well respected that for people that don't know who she is, I'm assuming that she was the person that taught everybody how to be a star.
Right.
Poise and elocution and how to behave and what to do with your hands when you're on stage and things like that.
Yeah.
Right. She taught the girls how to be, what did she always say? Something about the rose petals.
Her little flowers.
Something, we came out as something, but we ended up, you know, in being rose petals, which...
Right.
In other words, she thought at the beginning that we were just little young girls that just didn't care. We'd walk one way and lean this way and sit down another way and cross the leg the other way. And everything we did was the wrong way.
Uh-huh.
So she ended up showing us the proper way to do all those things and to be ladies and to act like ladies.
Gotcha. So, all right, so you're back out on tour. And then what was the next tune that you did in the studio?
Heat Wave.
We'll be right back.
Now, you know, might I say that, you know, having had all of those groups that I was in and not having been on the same level, but, you know, doing the top 40 groups and playing the cover tunes and also having my vocal group, you know, that, you know, was trying to get a deal, you know, and all the record contracts that we signed that never amounted to anything. But I will tell you that Heat Wave was the take a break tune for just about 60% of the top 40 cover bands in America. You know, they would play the Heat Wave chord changes four or five times, talk over it, and then sit down and take a 20-minute break.
Wow.
You know, I don't even know if you're aware of that, but everybody was playing Heat Wave. What a dynamite record that was to follow up after Memories. You must have been just so adored on stage when you came out and did that tune.
We were.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. I know Motown usually went out as a review. Did you do any of the shows in New York? Did you do the Brooklyn Fox with Murray the K at that point?
Of course. Yep.
Yeah.
We did.
Because I was at just about every Murray show. I didn't know the first Jackie. I knew Jackie Zeman when he was with Jackie. And then he had a third Jackie. Actually, you know, sadly enough, Jackie broke up with him when he got sick, which is not a great story. But Jackie Zeman did. And then he went out and he found another Jackie before he passed away. So, you know, he was just full of those Jackies. But he was a funny guy, you know. And of course, you did the Dick Clark tours, I'm sure.
We never did Dick Clark tours.
Oh, you did not?
No, we never made it on the Dick Clark tour.
Wow.
We did do his show.
Uh-huh.
When he was in Philadelphia.
You did Bandstand.
And American Bandstand.
Right.
Yeah, but we never did one of his.
Well, I'm sure you were on Bandstand a bunch of times with a few hits.
We did Bandstand a couple times.
Right, right. So after Heat Wave, was that the Quicksand tune that came next, do you think?
Yeah.
I think it was Quicksand.
Quicksand was 1963.
Can't you see?
Yeah, and then Annette, you left for a little while, I think.
I left in 64.
Right.
Because I had gotten married,
right.
And I thought I wanted to start my family. Well, I had started my family.
Right, okay. And
yes, I left early on in 64, the middle of 64
right.
I left.
And usually what happens, you know, I know a lot of times because I'm in it and then I'm out of it and then, you know, it's like life changes, whatever, and you go away. But, you know, I've always been drawn back to it all my life, you know, because once that's in your blood, it's very, very hard to get away from it because the creative process is always going on and doesn't take too long to warm up if you haven't sung in a while. To get back to a microphone and go, okay, I'm ready, you know, and you sing again. And then I guess when you left, was it Betty Kelly that came into the group?
Yes, Betty Kelly replaced her.
Right, I see. And then, and of course, and Roz, you were still with the group.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the tune, In My Lonely Room. That tune come about?
Just another one of the tunes that one of the writers decided to give it to the Vandellas. You know how they decide, that the writers go in and they write these tunes and they decide who they want to give the song to.
How did Motown decide to do that? Because I know, I mean, I've been with other record companies and I know what happens. I've even seen tunes given to artists. I mean, you know, the old story about Laurie with the Mystics was that Teenager in Love was written for the Mystics and Dion was the head act at Laurie Records. And he said, I don't think so. And so they took it away and they gave it to Dion. And Doc Pomus and Mort Shuman went home and wrote Hushabye for the Mystics the following weekend. So, you know, there is some kind of politicking that goes on, you know, within record companies sometimes with tunes as to who gets them and who doesn't. Because sometimes they know they have a hit in their hand, and it's like, who do we give this to?
Yeah, and they start to think, well, I think this will be a hit with so-and-so and so-and-so, or I think this will be a hit. Because I know Holland Dozier Holland
right.
started out writing for us.
Right.
And basically starting out, everything we did, Holland, Georgia, Holland did.
Right.
But then when they needed a hit, they needed a hit on the Supremes.
Right.
He put them to work for the Supremes, and he started writing. They started writing.
Well, you know, there was all that stuff, you know, and I've spoken about this on the radio and whatever, and, you know, it's like I bring it up sometimes and not. But, you know, there was always that thought that Berry always, like, kind of, let's say, moved things in Diane's direction.
Okay. Yes.
You know, for whatever reason. And I was told, you know, that, you know, Diana was Diane when she was walking around, you know, the studio, and then gradually she became Diana.
Diana, yep.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, but that's, you know, that's evolution.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that, I guess that has to do with the politics within record companies, and everybody is affected by it.
Well, that's,
you know,
true, because that's like you said, in that era, everything was focused on Diana and the Supremes at the time. It was just the Supremes then.
Right.
And because the way it was always told to us is you're next, you know, you're next on the list. Even when it came time for them, this big deal came up with the Copacabana.
Right.
It was like they were the first to, they were the first to perform in the Copacabana.
Right.
And it was based on, okay, well, if they go over well here, you're next. You know, we'll start working on you.
Right.
Get you there, which eventually we made it. We also made it. Copacabana.
Right.
It was like you were always next.
Wow. Which is, you know, and I consider that one of my feathers in my cap, which was I sang with another fellow out of the many musical situations I had, and I did the Copa, you know, the week after Fats Domino and the week before Lana Cantrell years ago, and I was there for a week. They were going to take us to Vegas, and I didn't like some of the guys who the other guy was hanging out with. As a matter of fact, they developed a showcase for us. Sammy Davis was there. It was Sal Sicari's orchestra, you know, ABC Talent, and, you know, they were all there, and they said, yous guys are going to go to Vegas, and yous are going to do all the lounges. But I found out that when I used to go around with these guys, and they used to go upstairs, I had to wait in the car, and I said, I can't live my life that way. You know, because I don't want to be with those guys. And what happened was, everybody I spoke to started every sentence with Mike, come here, this is what you're gonna do, and finally I said, I'm not doing this. And they were very mad at me, you know, when I left. But I said, I can't do this for the rest of my life. You know. I'm sure you understand what I'm talking about, but that was it. I wanted to be my own boss. So anyway, Live Wire comes out, and of course, that's a hit.
Okay.
and then we get to a tune called Dancing in the Streets, and everybody and the whole world was dancing in the streets. That became like the national anthem for a while.
It did.
You know, I mean, how much fun, you know, to be behind and associated with that record had to be just fabulous. You know.
And that was we had finally eventually lost Holland Dozier Holland because they were working writing for the Supremes.
Right.
So this was Mickey Stevenson and Ivy Hunter's tune.
Right.
And they gave it to Mandela's sisters. Yeah.
And that was great. So about that time, I mean, when you were going out on tour, I guess you were still going out with a Motown review of sorts.
No, I think around that time, everybody seemed to have that second Motown review. It was where everybody seemed to have branched off, you know, on their own.
I see. Everybody had found their own little niche, you mean?
Places. All except for one day, one time of the year, and that's around Christmas. For a while, everybody was home Christmas because they always had the big Christmas show at the Fox Theater.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Yeah.
That's so right.
Basically, they had a Motown review at the Fox Theater every Christmas.
That is correct. And I went to every one of those shows. I used to go and I used to see the movie, the show, and I would move down every show, you know, some people just left and some people stayed and they just kept moving down, you know, they didn't get thrown out by the ushers, you know, and those were great times, you know, those were great times because everybody was there and the band and the backup bands were great.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Except I noticed this. As the night went on, and you'll probably, you know, tell me if I'm right or wrong, because this is what I remembered. As the night went on, the energies changed, and you'd come out and you'd sing your tune, or you'd come out and you'd sing four or five tunes, And they were different tempos than the show before. But you just had to adapt. Like, sometimes you come out and the tempo was like this. Sometimes you come out and the tempo was a little slower and you'd look at each other and you go, but you just sang through it. Am I right? Anyway.
And we get that sometimes now, but you have to remember we were doing 5 shows a day.
Right.
We were working like from 12 noon till 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
12 at night or 1 in the morning. Because the shows were so large, the Motown Reviews were so large, it had so many people on it.
Couldn't get them all in at once.
It would just go on forever. So,
right.
Yeah, I could see them being very tired. I mean, we were, too. At the end of the day, it was like, oh, my goodness, you know?
And when you're doing the same song over and over again. And
yeah, that's true.
Eventually, it's like you start out.
Yeah, but didn't you have to find ways to, like, spice it up amongst yourselves? Like, you'd kid around with each other in the middle of the tune, you know, just to make yourselves, to keep yourselves fresh.
We do that now.
Right.
You know, I mean, we do it now, and we did. You know, we try and grab a nap in the dressing room or something because it seemed like, well, for us, I know, and I think for most of the artists, especially with the Motown Review,
right.
We were always, all of us always stayed backstage. We hardly ever went to the dressing room until the shows were over.
Oh, yeah, you supported each other backstage. It's that way now in all the shows that I'm in.
So we were, like, backstage, and we was watching. We wanted to see how they were moving on stage,
right.
Pushing them on and egging them on and all that kind of stuff. So that meant that we were out of our dressing room for, say, if the show was 2 hours, for that 2 hours also.
Right.
You know, then everybody kind of went to their dressing room at the same time.
Right.
And you didn't get that longer time to rest in between.
Right.
You know, a little bell would ring, and they'd go, okay, we're ready for the next show, you know, and it was time to remake up and
put
the clothes on, and we did exactly pretty much the same thing. So by the end of the night, it was quite tiring, and I'm sure for the band, I'm sure they had to be wasted.
And then you had to do it the next night.
And we did it for a week.
Right.
We would go in for like a week.
With the musicians, they had to play a whole show with us.
Right.
We go do 3 or 4 songs, and we're off. You know?
And we were off. They played the whole 2 hours, maybe.
So I can imagine with the in-between little breaks that they get, you know, they wore out.
But you know, I mean, look, you talk about the Vandellas, and I'm laughing because I saw you on the Mike Douglas show, believe it or not, and I remember you being on the Mike Douglas show. And I remember, of course, you were on Bandstand, and of course, you did Ed Sullivan, Shindig, and
Hullabaloo.
It's Hullabaloo, all of those shows. Here's a group that had 12 top 40 hits. Very few groups can say that. 12 top 40 hits and so many top 10 hits. But I'm going to tell you this. There are girl groups, and I won't go through all the names of the groups, and you talk about backgrounds for girl group backgrounds or whatever. But there's one song, the backgrounds, because I'm a musician and I'm a vocal arranger and I'm playing guitar since I'm a kid. There is not a song ever done by a girl group during that time that had the backgrounds that Jimmy Mac had. The backgrounds on that tune are so perfect for an R&B tune, for a rock and roll tune, for a doo-wop tune, whatever you want to call it, that to me, every time I hear that tune, most people listen to the whole tune. I listen to the backgrounds on that tune.
The background.
They are fabulous.
Yeah, now they did. They, I think there was a couple of different renditions of them, because I think the last one that I heard was out of something, that they kind of changed it or did something different to it.
Yeah, but I'm talking about... I mean, who thinks of that? You know, it's like inside out, upside down, unison to harmony. You know,
that's
actually
us doing most of that. But they added the andantes, a lot of the ahs, some of the ahs, the higher ahs, is the andante singing.
Oh, okay, because there are some people on the top of that harmony that are, you know, up there.
If you listen, we're singing doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, and then you hear some ahs, so we couldn't be doing both at the same time.
That's true.
So most of it, the background is us, but those real high ahs is all they had added, like that.
That is my favorite.
And I was on that song, even though it didn't come out till 67, I was on Jimmy Mac.
Wow. I mean, I just love that song. I could, but you know, that's a song, it's like...
I think that's my favorite, too.
Oh, we have it, because you know why? It's just a very unique tune, you know? Like, you get categorized, you say, okay, now we're going to play the girl groups, now we're going to play the girl tunes, you know, even the DJs, you know, when they run their shows, oh, we're going to have a girls' night, and we're going to play, you know, and we're going to play all the girls' tunes, you know? But let me tell you, that tune, every time, if they're playing the girls' tunes, that tune always gets, it deserves to be played twice in a row just because of the backgrounds in that tune.
Wow.
I mean, that's...
Thank you.
Oh, hey, listen, that's my feeling.
That's great.
That's, you know, I mean, but I think you can understand what I'm saying as far as how it's constructed. You know, it's just a really great song. It's great.
I like it. It's one of my favorites.
Why was there not a live album of the 1968 Copa performance, Supremes, Temptations, Four Tops, Marvin Gaye? You know, so many groups at the Copa, they didn't record it.
Right. You know, and I don't know for sure if they recorded while we were there or not, but that they did not. That is something that they never put
out. And that's something, because I know about that, and I'm saying to myself, that in itself... At everybody at the Copa, that would have made. I mean, they'd still be selling that album. You know, that would have been great. You know,
we did have a live one. We do have one live album that they did record. I don't remember exactly where it was recorded, but they never did a live album. And they had the Temps were at the Copa, the Supremes were at the Copa. We were so. They had enough artists there to record one.
Now, a lot of people that are not aficionados or record collectors, they're really not sure who's on the record and who's not on the record. But I will tell you that there are people, because I get phone calls and emails all the time when I do interviews with people filling in the gaps and people, you know, correcting things that I say. I even have people calling up and correcting some of the artists that say, I was on this and this record, and people call up and they say, later on, and they say, no, you weren't.
Well, you know, people can tell you more so than you know, you know, sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because, you know, they, well, you see, that's how it is, you know, when they're playing your records, they know you. You don't know them very well, but they know you. You know, after a show, they come up to you and they go, oh, you've been in my living room on my record player since I was like 11 years old. Hi, it's me, Debbie. You know,
that's like Professor Bell. He knows everything that the Vandellas has put out.
Right.
So he knows all of the songs that I actually recorded, even when we recorded with some of the other people, when we did background for other people. He knows my voice, and he knows Rosalind's voice so well that he sends us emails all the time, and he'll go, now, isn't this you?
Right.
You know, just verify it for me, because I hear you, Annette, and I hear Rosie on the top.
Right.
You know, so, like you say, they do know. They pick out, they know the sound. They become accustomed to the sound like we do.
Right.
Because we have to listen to different things that he sends us you know, and just really listen. I listen for myself, and I listen for Roz because I harmonize with Roz.
Right.
Of course, I know her voice.
Right.
You know, and I can say, yeah, that's me, and that's Roz singing with me because we've
right.
always sang with
well,
the other. We've never sang with anybody else.
That's because one beat a low voice and one beat a high voice, so it's like it works.
Right.
I'm telling you. But anyway, so Martha left the group at one point. She went on her own to do a solo thing, which, you know, I don't remember hearing too many things from her that were solo things.
Well, you know, it kind of didn't happen that way.
Yeah.
What happened was, okay, now in 68, I left the group.
Okay.
I didn't leave the group.
Right.
I was excused from the group.
Uh-huh.
Oh. I was called out to Motown one day, and one of the representatives put me in a little room and said, we need to talk to you, and we just want to let you know that Martha no longer wants to sing with you.
Hmm.
So,
this is, well, you know, this is the first that I'm hearing about it, but I'm listening.
So, that was in that. And I'm like, it was like I had no choice as to say whether, you know, what I like about it or what I didn't like about it.
Right.
It was just like, you know, this is what she wants to do.
Hmm.
So you're just gone. You're out. And she's putting her sister in the group.
Uh-huh.
And see, because actually before Betty had replaced Annette, then Betty was excused from the group.
Right.
By Martha.
Wow.
She no longer wanted to sing with that. Betty.
Wow.
So they excused Betty from the group, Motown, this number.
Right.
And they put her sister, Lois Reeves in the group.
Right.
So Lois and I sung together for quite some time. Then, that's what I say, in 68, it was like a thing like, she doesn't want to sing with you. And I never got any reason as to why. They did not give me an explanation.
Wow.
The explanation was, we have to do this because this is what she wants to do. Martha is a lead singer, and you're a background singer.
Except, you know, to my way of thinking, I mean, you were there day one.
Day one. It was my group. It was our group. Annette, the group belonged to Annette and myself.
Right.
But the first two original people that started in the group and ended up, you know.
Well, this is, you know, this is an amazing story, and this is something that I think, I guess, needs to be said. I mean, you know, how that could happen where you bring your talent to them, they have hit records because of your talent, and then all of a sudden one person can decide that something that you created is going to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that must have been not too easy to take.
And basically in the contract, it does state that you can be replaced. You know, it's not a guarantee that you know, are a guaranteed singer. You can be replaced.
Right. And of course, you know, they owned the proverbial trademark, I'm assuming.
Right. Right.
Right. Which, you know, it's, you know, we hear a lot about trademarks and original people and whatever. But, you know, I mean, from my point of view, you are the Vandellas, and just because someone points to you and says that you're not, doesn't mean that you're not the Vandellas.
Now, that's true.
I've said my piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, once I was replaced, and, like, I even tried to get in touch with Martha to find out, well, what was the problem? You know, what
right.
happened? What is it? What's the reason?
Right.
But I never did get in touch with her, and it had been years before
right.
I even spoke to Martha again. And now my replacement was Sandra Tilley. She was a member of the Velvettes.
Right.
So once I left, it was Lois Reed and Sandra Tilley.
Uh-huh.
So I was like out of the picture. So actually what happened then, I think in, I don't know what year it was, but when Motown moved to California.
Right.
They just took this sudden move, and I guess Martha was not included in the movie.
Wow. So, in other words, they undid Martha as well, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just, you know, they didn't, like, take her on as an artist.
Now, did that include royalties? I mean, did they push you? You must have had some royalties coming as well, though.
Royalties, that's a whole other story. We had a big issue with the royalties now, and it's amazing how that could have happened, because actually when I left in 68,
right,
at least for, I can't give it a number, but I know it had been over 10 years or more that I had not received any royalties.
Wow.
You know, there was no, it was like when I left, there was a settlement that was made.
Right.
Between, I was supposed to be, that Motown made between myself and Martha,
mm-hmm.
which there was a settlement made, but the settlement was not carried through.
All right. Were you involved in that? I mean, was it settled like over your head? Were you involved in it, or it was just they said, okay,
yeah,
we...
Yeah, I mean, it was
right.
Like, here's a studio, here's a piece of paper.
Okay.
This is what's happening. You
right.
Go here, sign this paper.
Right.
And actually, the way the settlement was weighed, it wasn't... We didn't actually have... I didn't have an attorney. They didn't have an attorney. You know, Motown was the type of people that... You don't bring in an inside attorney. You just do deal
right,
with it.
I hear you.
Take care of everything.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. We are family.
So, yeah. We take everything for you.
Yeah.
And us having that much confidence, we never even... Even when we were young, even our parents...
Wow.
...wanted us to sing, so they never thought about reading a contract, signing a contract.
Oh, that's the way it was for a lot of people, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So the only thing they signed was, my daughter can sing.
Right. I hear you.
So... Then when it came down to this, I was called down, and I didn't even see Martha at that particular time. It was a piece of paper presented, and it says, okay, she will pay you X amount of dollars.
Right.
Okay. Sign it. Okay, you know. No, you can't have anybody read over anything. Here, sign it.
Up.
So, in the process, when it came down to where's the money, I never thought of mine.
Wow.
So, and then, and... Speaking to somebody says, well, you know what you have to do. You know, the only thing you can do is either don't get the money or you can sue Martha.
Right.
So I had to, in turn, sue Martha.
Right.
In order to get what she had promised to me.
Right.
It finally got settled, which, you know, I did sue her. And I think as I heard years later, she was upset with me because I sued her.
Well, why should she get all the marbles?
Yeah, but I had no choice. So,
you know.
Then I think that's, like I say, when Motown left.
Hey, when you show up late for the audition, you know, I mean, you know, that's the way she started. I mean, you know, listen, I'm not taking sides, but I'm saying to myself, you know, it doesn't sound right to me the way you're explaining it to me. It sounds like there should have been equity.
So that's what happened. And so eventually, I think once Motown moved, Martha stayed in Detroit. And I think Martha moved out to California for a little while.
Right.
And then next thing I heard, she was back in Detroit. But when she came back, she continued to sing.
Right.
But she started singing with two of her sisters.
Right.
And
did she call it Martha Reeves and the Vandellas?
Was still Martha Reeves and the Vandellas.
And who owned the copyright at that point?
At that time, the name was still with Motown, but we found out Motown did not own the name.
Wow.
So that this is coming up.
Because we know now that when a copyright or a trademark runs out, a lot of these promoters go out and they just trademark it and then hope that they can find...
Yes,
you know.
They do.
Well, that's coming up in a few minutes. I'll tell you what happened with that.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it.
So then she started singing with, like I say, her sisters. And in the process, I think she got upset with the sisters. So this was like at least 15 years.
Oh, so now you knew it wasn't your fault.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It had to be somebody's fault.
Sounds like what Ronnie Spector told me. I lived in Danbury, Connecticut, you know, for many, many years. And Ronnie and John Greenfield, you know, lived in that area too. And I used to meet him in the diner and we used to talk. And she said, you know, I try to get back with the Ronettes. You know, we tried to do a reunion thing. We were together 20 minutes rehearsing and we looked at each other and we decided the things that we couldn't stand about each other then, we remembered that we couldn't stand each other about each other now. And that was it. But go ahead. So now...
Once she moved back to Detroit.
Right.
And I think it was 1 year. It was around New Year's.
Right.
I got this phone call. And I'll tell you now, this has been at least over 10 years or so that I have even spoke to Martha.
Right.
And to today, I still don't know the reason why I was dismissed from the group.
Right.
But she had a show that she wanted to do in Washington, D.C.
Right.
For New Year's. And out of the blue, she called me and asked me, would I do this show with her?
Wow.
And I had to think about it for a while. I said, are you serious? So I decided, okay. And then she admitted to me, well, I'll get in touch with somebody else to sing with you.
Right.
And I told her, I said, well, wait. I said, let me call Annette. And because Annette had been out of the business for years.
You said, let's do this right if we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, why should I try it with somebody else? Let me call Annette and see how she feels about it. Maybe she wants to get back in.
Right.
So I did call Annette. And Annette?
And I thought she was crazy.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what? Hey... So you do
called
it.
Me on my job, and she said, Martha wants me to sing with her, and she wants to use another girl. And I told her to let me call you and see if you wanted to do this show with her.
Right.
With her and I. You know, and I was like, Roz, I haven't sang in like 25 years, no more than in the shower.
Right.
And she said, oh, girl, we can do it. And she said, we're going to make a little bit of money, you know. And I was like, I don't know, Roz. I don't know. And so she said, well, think about it, you know. And I said, well, okay. She said, well, you don't have that long to think about it, but think about it and get it.
You don't have that long. You say, do I have to look at her also?
Roz must have gotten off her job because, like, a little later on, Roz showed up on my job.
Wow.
And she was like, she took me in the ladies' bathroom, and she was like, girl.
Come on, Vandella.
I had a chance to make a little money.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, Roz, but I have a thing. And I don't even know if I want to do this.
Right.
You know. And she said, but we can do it. This is one time. We can do this, you know. So I was like, well, you know, I really didn't want to disappoint her or anything. And I was like, well, okay, I'll try it, you know.
Right.
So it pretty much went from there, you know.
Wow.
So, we ended up going back. We ended up doing this show with Martha, and I don't know if she liked the sound behind her again.
Right.
Or what, but she ended up, we regrouped with Martha in 88.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the show went so well till she, you know, it was, that Vandella sound and everything.
Well, it's not like you didn't have a whole bunch of hits to sing that night. You know, I mean,
yeah, we had a whole show.
It's not like, oh, let's just get together and see what comes up. It's like, you know, I mean, it's a lot of water under the bridge, but there's a lot of stuff that you guys had to sing and had to say out there, most likely.
Yes, it was.
And I could just picture it now. It probably started off like, what's this going to be? And probably by the time you got to the third tune, it was probably like, hey, I remember this.
Yeah. So when we ran through, we did one day rehearsal.
Right.
And everything just came back.
Wow.
That was it.
It was so surprising to me and Roz that the harmony just came through, like we hadn't even left.
That's a great story.
I mean, it really surprised her and I that we still blended.
Now
you know, we kind of looked at each other like, wow,
and
you know.
Even people that saw the show gave us this compliment and say, oh, you girls sound just like you did
on the record.
You know, unbelievable.
The record. Mm-hmm.
So the band must have been great that night, and you know, So who was writing your charts and who was actually producing that whole thing? I mean, if you only had one night's rehearsal, somebody had to have all those charts.
Well, you know, that was my, because because she had already had all her charts, and she had a chart, her show, and everything together because she had been performing
previous.
But I think what happened was something happened between her and the sisters.
Could be.
And they, I guess, he didn't want them to do the gig, or they did not want to do the gig. I don't really know.
Right.
But she needed a backup, so that was the first thing in her mind was Paul Roslin.
Right.
You know, and when I got the call, it wasn't like, I apologize for what happened, and or, you know, maybe we could sit down and talk about it or something like that. It was just like,
be there.
I got this gig, and I need some background singers, and I thought about you, and I just want to know, do you want to do this show?
Wow.
So I just turned around and said, oh, fine, you know. So
wow.
Then we all got together, and once that show, she appreciated it, and she liked it so well, she asked us if we want to continue to sing with her, because she said, you know, I have more stuff coming up.
And because it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, right. And then she said, when people have always been asking me, where are the Vandellas? You know, where's Roslin and Annette?
Right.
So, she thought this would be a great idea. So Annette and I, and of course, Annette and I had jobs.
Right.
You know, at that time, we had slumbered.
Full-time job.
We slumped around so long. Well, Annette always had her job.
Right.
But, you know, for a while, once I left the group, I didn't do anything. But then eventually I had to find something to do, so I started working.
Right. So, and so all of you started singing together again. If I'm correct, did you all go to England together and sing?
Yes.
Yes, we did. Sure did.
Right.
She asked us to go to England because she said people over there have been dying for her to come to England with the original Vandellas. And so they set up a tour. We went over to England with her.
6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
The first time was 6 weeks. And I had to go to my job and beg them to let me off. I didn't have the opportunity to go to England for 6 weeks.
That's pretty funny. You go up to somebody and say, listen, I'm an original Vandella. I need to take time off. And you're talking to somebody who's like 27 years old. And they go, who?
You know? Yeah. They all knew on my job, though.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm just teasing.
You know, but they knew that I had sang with the Vandellas.
Right.
You know, that I was a Vandella.
Right.
And, but when I had to go and I had to ask for this long list of time off.
Right.
I had vacation time that was building up. And I was able to use my vacation time. And you know, I asked somebody, I was like, now how do I get, you know, all this time off? And somebody just said, go to the supervisor, just tell her what's going on, and ask for a personal leave. And that's what I did. I asked for a personal leave without pay.
Right.
And I figured, well, that'll be cool. She's going to be paying me, so if I don't get any money on my job except for my vacation time, a couple of weeks, that'll be all right. But we had the greatest time on that tour.
Well,
I did. I took a leave of absence, and they gave me so much time, and the my return time was just about the time we were about to the tour with her.
Tell me about the tune Step Into My Shoes.
Oh, Step Into My Shoes. Now, you know, that's an Ian Levine tune. Don't you want to tell about that?
Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, you know Ian Levine is from England.
Right.
And Ian decided to come over and he wanted to redo some tunes on some of the Motown artists.
Right.
He wanted to do a resurgence, per se. And he wanted to do something, of course, with Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, and the original Vandellas.
Right.
And so he had recorded quite a few different people, even some of the, I shouldn't say the unknowns, but some of the ones who maybe had a little hit and it didn't go anywhere or anything like that.
Right.
He did some recordings with just about everybody.
Right.
I think he went to California. Everybody that he could.
Right.
And he did some recordings. He wanted to do a tune, he wanted to do Step Into My Shoes with Martha and the Vandellas.
Right.
I think it had been recorded already, or the background was already on it with somebody else.
Right.
And he wanted us to do it together. Well, Miss Reeves decided that she did not want to do that with the Vandellas. She did not want the original Vandellas on that song with her. So, she went into the studio the night before we were supposed to do it.
Right.
And she told Ian that she did not want us on the song. That she wanted to do it by herself.
So
he recorded the song. He said, but I wanted a song with Mark and the Vandellas. She said, I don't want to do that. So he went ahead and he recorded the song. He recorded her, put her on the song, and used the background that was on it. Was that Levaine and them on there, right?
Yeah, that was part of Levaine.
I think it was Levaine and them, the Andantes, doing the background on that. So
because actually it was their song. They did, because once she said she didn't want to do it, they gave it to her, to them. They did it. And then he turned back around, I guess, and redid it.
And put her lead on it.
Does her voice in. Because she changed her mind. And said she wanted to do it. So, and Bells are not on that song in the background.
So who is actually on, you know, at when the smoke cleared, who is actually on that record?
Pat Lewis, because I think Marlene, a couple of the Andantes, Marlene, Jackie, and I think Levaine, and Pat Lewis. And, yeah, they did do the background because I like they actually did the song.
Once
Martha said she didn't want to do it, they recorded it, but he re-recorded, but he kept them in the background. And what it was Ian Levine had quite a few groups that he recorded, but everybody was doing background. We even got a couple of stuff, a lot of stuff.
So he was the Phil Spector of the UK, huh?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And the Vandellas again was recording behind a lot of people again.
Yeah,
right.
We've done a lot of background on a lot of those tunes.
Right. So Roz and Annette were on that record.
Huh?
No, we weren't on.
Oh, you weren't. But you see, a lot of people think that you were.
Yes, they do.
Because that record, you know, when collectors talk about that record, they say that it's the three original Vandellas.
They think that's us, yeah.
They think it's us, but it's not. Now, we did go on a television show that was here in Detroit, and we did it because we had a show called Kelly & Company.
Right.
And Kelly & Company had Ian Levine on, and he brought on a couple of the artists, few of the artists he brought to the show so that they could do it. And we actually did that show with Martha on Kelly & Company.
Wow.
We actually performed with her on that singing. We lip-synced, of course.
Okay.
The record, but we did it with her. But Ian later came back to Rosalind and myself, and he said, I am so disappointed because I wanted a song with the original Vandellas on it. So he had Ivy Hunter, and who else wrote the other one, Rosalind?
He actually did one of them, and I think
he recorded two songs that only Rosalind and myself are on.
Gotcha.
Not Gonna Be, it's called Not Gonna Be Ready.
Yeah.
wait a minute. Let me see.
If you want my love, why don't you come get it? If you need my love. You say you need me, and we'll be together.
Yeah, what's the name of it?
We like that one, right?
We
like that one. Not going to be ready.
Uh-huh. And I sang harmony together.
We sang harmony on the record, and that's all. We don't want two on the record.
Uh-huh.
Those two records. He was determined that he was going to get a record done by us or with us on it.
Well, I don't blame him.
Well, that's good. That was our experience with Ian Levine.
So, okay, after having gone through all of that, I mean, you know, Grammy Hall of Fame, pioneer members of the R&B Foundation, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is the pinnacle, you know, Rolling Stones, 100 greatest groups, and, you know, all those tunes in the top 500, tunes in the top 40, tunes in the top 10, and, you know, here we are now. What are Roz and Annette doing now? I guess you're still singing.
Still singing.
And then one thing I can say about which I am honored, everything that you mentioned, that considered included the original Band Dollar.
Right.
Right.
Everything that the awards were presented to the original,
Band Dollar.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the only one, the Rock and Roll
Right.
Is in, because Betty was actually with the group a little more longer than Annette, and she's, you know, on more recordings. So when they did induct us, they also inducted Betty Kelly.
Well, you know, Terry Stewart is a good friend of mine, and I've been to his house when he lived in Stamford, Connecticut, and Harmony Street, sang at his house, and, you know, we talk sometimes, and we talk about the process, and we talk about the people that are in, that should be in, the people that are not in, that should be in. I mean, there's a big push to get Johnny Maestro in now. There's a big push, you know, and all the people that are in that should not be in.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you know, you look over the list and you must scratch your head sometimes and say, well, that there's a political move.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the three of us had this conversation, you know, about a week ago about who is in and who else should be in along with them, you know, not to get off on another subject. But it is a very political thing. However, it is the pinnacle, and to be there with all of those other greats has to be a lifetime achievement. And I look at both of you and I say, you're loved by so many people that just played your music, you know, and grew up listening to your music and were delighted by your music and danced to your music. And nobody can ever take that away from you, whether it has to do with a trademark or royalty or anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real story.
When I went, reminded me of something when you mentioned the name. We, Annette and I did, maybe, was it 3 years ago? Two, 3 years ago?
About 3 or 4 years ago, yeah.
We did copyright the name.
The original
Vandellas.
Right.
So we are owners, and we are able to use that name.
Right, and that's correct, and that's what's happening nowadays. As we said, with the fact that there are two or three of many of the groups that have splintered, all with original members, and sometimes they attach their name to the group, and sometimes they call it the original group, and I guess it's important to be respected for the things that you did. I draw attention to Charlie Thomas going with John Stossel, going up to the Drifter Group with the album in his hand and saying, is your picture on this album? Here's my picture. Where's your picture? And going up to the promoter and saying, you guys are stealing my money. And they never went on that night. They locked themselves in the trailer.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, and that was on ABC News, and that was with John Stossel. And he went right in their faces. I mean, that's a classic. It's on YouTube. It's a classic piece of film. And he was irate. He said, you're stealing my money. And he got right up on the mic on stage, and he said, these people are stealing my money.
I'm
a drifter, and I have no idea who these people are.
Right.
You know, so definitely the story should be told, and definitely everybody should get their just due. But I think it's fabulous that both of you are still singing.
There's one thing that I really, really regret, though, and I can't understand.
Go ahead.
Is why we never got a gold record.
Oh.
The Vandellas have never. I can't speak and say whether Martha got the record, and
uh-huh.
We don't know any about it or anything.
Oh, I'm sure that's the case.
Do not have a gold record hanging on my wall.
Nope, neither do I.
Somebody has it, because I know I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that there were gold records issued. Hmm. There were gold records issued, I'm sure of it.
Well, Annette does not have one, and Rosalind does not have one.
That would be an interesting scenario.
Yes, it would.
I think it's time to call Bowser.
Yeah, Bowser might know. We might have to call him.
We'll have to call him up. Hey, Bowser, you know, let's add that to the list.
People have inquired, because as a matter of fact, I think Professor Vail went to bat for us.
Right.
I think he even required, but we've never gotten any results.
Well, I'd like to get some feedback on that from people that are listening as to where are the gold records, because obviously there are the gold records, and I'll bet you that, I'll bet you Martha has a gold record hanging in her house. I'd put money on that.
Let's see. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And it's a very interesting scenario. But
it's been a couple of years now that the Marvelous just got their gold record.
I see.
About maybe going on 3 years now.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And they got two.
Right.
They finally went back and checked. Somebody in Inkster did the background, did the digging and everything, and verified and checked and made sure. And they ended up presenting them with their gold record.
Wow. That's a very interesting scenario. That's something that I think everybody should look into. I don't know if you realize how many people out there really love the music and really, at this point in their lives as baby boomers, you know, this is their hobby, just playing the music, collecting the music, knowing the facts, and making sure that everybody has their just due. And I was on the radio 20-some-odd years ago with Mary Wilson and Chuck Rubin, you know, the lawyer, and a couple of other people in Poughkeepsie, New York, on a friend's show, Solid Gold Jukebox, with Rick McCaffrey, Gary Lee Schwartz. And they were talking about the Truth in Rock situation then, and the fact that, A, people are still owed royalties, B, people are still owed things that they earned when they were on the road, but never saw them because everything was being done over their heads. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yes.
and that really was, you know, kind of the name of the game. So you haven't spoken to Martha in a while, huh?
Well, oh, my goodness, you would have to bring up that one. This is a piece for you. I don't know if you want to put this in the interview.
If it sounds good.
We saw Martha at the funeral yesterday.
Okay.
Now, people asked us, because we haven't sang with Martha in the last maybe 5-6 years. And
right.
The only time we do sing with her is
at funerals.
To like the Vocal Group Hall of Fame, and
right.
They want all of the original group there.
Right.
And they want us to do a show. We will sing with her then, and we'll do the group thing. Other than that, we don't sing with her anymore. She
right.
uses her sisters, and we didn't for a long time, for about 5 years.
You only sing when T.J. Lubinsky is breathing down your neck, right?
So all of our fans and everybody, they kept going, why don't you buy your background singers? Why don't you just get your lead singer and get back out there?
Right.
You know, it took Rosalind and I about 5 years to make up our mind, and after everybody kept bugging us, to actually hold an audition, and we got a young lady to sing with us.
Right.
Okay, now, Martha, we understand, does not like that. And they keep people ask us, well, what happened between you guys? Nothing. She just decided she didn't want to sing with us anymore, like she didn't want to sing with Rosalind in 68, and she just stopped calling us for
right.
gigs, okay? Nothing happened. We didn't have an argument or nothing.
Right.
But when we see her now, and the feedback that we get from different people is that she is upset with us because she feels like we're in competition with her. We're not in competition with her. We're simply trying to do what we like to do.
And what you've always done.
Trying to make a little living at it. We're
and what
to
you've
do
always done, right. And what you've
the
always done.
The reason that she's doing it.
Right.
Okay? But now she's gotten to a point. We used to see her, and we used to embrace, hi, Maud, how you doing? You know, how's your son? And blah, blah,
right.
so on and so forth. And we talked for a few minutes, and that would be that.
Right.
Within the last year or so, when we see Martha at different events, she looks at us sort of like, what are you doing here? But, you know, we get invited to the same thing.
Right.
Yesterday, we saw her at the funeral.
Right.
Martha walked past Rosalind and myself, and she said, how y'all doing?
Uh-huh.
And kept walking.
Uh-huh.
And Ros and I just looked at each other. It was like, there's no embrace. There's no stop for a minute. And Roz and I were standing still. Martha walked past us.
Right,
there's no nothing.
Hmm.
Almost no eye contact, no anything. She just like it better if we just disappear. But we're not going to do that.
No. I don't think
not going to do that.
I don't think
but that's
should.
How she treats us now.
Huh.
She just walks right past us. Like, she did acknowledge us, like, how y'all doing? And just walked right on past. And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, my goodness.
No? So this is what we get from her, you know.
So no, we don't see her that much.
Oh, okay. I am.
So we don't.
I got the answer to my question.
Oh no, we try not to see her much anyway. You know.
Yeah. All right, so life goes on.
Life does go on. And we're going to see her at other funerals, and we're going to see her at other affairs where all the Motown people are going to be there. We're going to continue to see her. But Rosalind is going to be Rosalind, and I'm still going to be Annette.
I'm going to make a psychic prediction. My prediction is that there will be a day when the three of you will probably sing again because, you know, that's the way it goes.
It might be. It probably will be.
Yeah, there you go.
You never know.
There you go. Let's hope that that happens.
Let's hope that happens.
Because you know what? There's a whole couple of million people that would love to hear that and love to see that happen. Regardless of what's going on underneath, there are millions of people that would like to see that happen.
Yeah, well, we wish we knew what was going on underneath because we don't even know that.
Yeah.
You know, but we're not worried about it either.
How about this? Let's do this. To be continued.
To be continued. Yes. There you go.
Well, ladies, Roz and Annette, the original Vandellas, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. I've learned so much about the real true stories behind the Vandellas. For all these years, I've enjoyed listening to just all the tunes. As I said, Jimmy Mac, one of my favorites, but right down the list, every tune is a tune that I just enjoyed and played and replayed. And I just want to thank you so much for delighting me tonight and all the people that are listening and telling me your story. It's been great.
Well, thank you.
It's been great.
Thanks for having us.
It's
We've enjoyed
great.
Also.
I'll talk to you both very soon.
Okay.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Well, have fun.
Okay. Good night, ladies. It's been really a lot of fun.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Good night, ladies. I've had a ball.
Good night.
Hey, let's just sit back and relax and listen to Roz and Annette do their thing. Sing it, ladies.
I know you're the one. Hi, this is Lenny Welch, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
I'm on the outside, looking in. Stewart, CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on one of my favorite shows, the Harmony Street Show.
Make me yours, say you're mine. Just we two. I'll always want you. We'll be together for a long, long time. You give me your love, and I'll give you my love. We'll always have each other. Just say you want me, never desert me. Oh, I could never, ever want another. Stay here with me. Together, just we two. You give me your love, and I'll give you my love. We'll always be held each other. Just say you want me, never desert me. I could never, ever want another. Stay here with me. I love you. I'm never ever gonna let you go. Yes, your love, I'm gonna be true. As we go together, just we two. Yeah, yeah, pretty baby.
And you listen to my good buddy Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show, and the word harmony is what I've been into for 52 years.
Well, I've looked at the crystals.
and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Have to let him go.
My honey is gone.
Silver and gold.
Silver and gold.
Silver and gold.
Bill Anthony at Bill Anthony Imperials, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Was no good for me, honey child. But your kisses.
Well, that's my show with Roz and Annette, the original Vandellas. Please visit my website at www.harmonystreet.biz. Lots of great pictures, lots of great stories, lots of great tunes. This is Mike Miller saying be safe and be well, and join me again on Harmony Street.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be, remember all the love we found, ooh, on Harmony Street, ooh, there was a place we that we used to go, when we were feeling down, and we were low. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's hearts. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's eyes. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. Nothing I could do, nothing to say.